Hello and welcome to the Master of Demon Gorge podcast. Today we're talking about climate in ancient Rome and the Han Dynasty. In the great 14th century novel, The Romance of the Three Kingdoms, which fictionalizes historical events from the Three Kingdoms era of the 2nd and 3rd centuries AD, there's a scene relating to the great Zhuge Liang that has been staying with me. We have, of course, done previous episodes on the Three Kingdoms. And you may remember Zhuge Liang or Zhuge Kongming from these episodes. He was supposed to be the smartest man in China, indeed one of the most brilliant individuals ever to have lived and walked onto the stage of Chinese history. And his nickname was Mr. Reclining Dragon. And you may recall that he initially resisted entering public life, or at least he put on a show of resisting entering public life. He would only enter politics, he made it clear, if a virtuous prince came to him and sincerely sought his advice. In the famous episode of The Three Visits to the Thatched Hut, Liu Bei, the distant cousin of the last Han Dynasty emperor, who would in time proclaim his own regime a continuation of the Han, came to Zhuge Liang and ultimately won his trust. As Zhuge Liang departed home to join Liu Bei and his cause, though, another character, a friend of his, let out a long sigh. "The reclining dragon," he says, "has found the right lord. But nonetheless, he was born into the wrong time. What a waste." The episode foreshadows the novel's denouement and what really happened in history. Ultimately, despite his remarkable talents, Zhuge Liang was unable to reverse the declining fortunes of the Han Dynasty. I've been thinking of this episode again recently as I've been reading Professor Kyle Harper's fascinating book, The Fate of Rome, in which he contends that the collapse of the Roman Empire can largely be attributed to two factors lying entirely beyond the control of the so-called great men of history: climate change and infectious diseases. And in reading his book, I couldn't help but to compare what he says about Rome with the course of Chinese history. Let's focus today, then, on a comparison between what Harper says happened with Rome due to climate with what perhaps happened with China due to the same factor. In recent years, we've obviously been collectively much more concerned about the impact of anthropogenic climate change. And now that climate scientists are digging around for more physical evidence of Earth's climate in the past, historians have unexpectedly benefited from their work. Or as Harper puts it, "The problem of anthropogenic climate change has heightened the stakes for understanding the paleoclimate. Historians are the great unintended beneficiaries of the ensuing scramble to scour the earth for natural archives, physical records that preserve clues about the history of the climate, ice cores, tree rings, ocean sediments, lake valves, and mineral deposits in caves, known as speleothems, have furnished insights into the Earth's past." The result, when it comes to the study of Western antiquity, is the establishment of the Roman climate optimum, also called the Roman warm period, which Harper dates to around 200 BC to 150 AD, although other scholars use different boundary dates. Romans themselves noted that their climate had warmed. Pliny the Elder, in the first century, wrote that beech trees, which used to grow only in the lowlands, had become a mountain plant. Vines and olives came to be cultivated farther north than ever before. Alpine glaciers retreated. And Ptolemy, the leading Roman scientist, reported rain in every month of the year except August in a city of Alexandria in Egypt, then a Roman province. Today, there is only one day of rain in Alexandria from May to September, inclusive. The Roman world during the Roman climate optimum, then, was noticeably warmer and more humid than the same geographical area was from the Middle Ages through modern times. Greater warmth and humidity meant greater agricultural output and the economic surplus with which to fund political and cultural achievements. And what happened in Roman history in those years from 200 BC to 150 AD? Well, in 201 BC, the Roman Republic won the Second Punic War against Carthage. In 146 BC, Rome won the Third Punic War and razed Carthage to the ground, destroying what was once its greatest external threat. Rome then marched through its period of dynasts, or political strongmen, from the election of Marius as consul in 107 BC to Sulla's march on Rome in 88 BC. Then we come to the time of Julius Caesar and his allies and adversaries. In 63 BC, the great orator Cicero was elected consul, and Pompey sacked Jerusalem. In 49 BC, Caesar crossed the Rubicon into Italy. There was no turning back now. Rome was entering its imperial age, even with Caesar's assassination 5 years later. Then, of course, you entered the Augustan era, the Julio-Claudian dynasty, followed by the Flavian dynasty, and finally, the Antonines. The Antonines ruled Rome from the end of the 1st century AD to the end of the 2nd. Edward Gibbon said of the Antonine Age, "If a man were called to fix the period in the history of the world during which the condition of the human race was most happy and prosperous, he would, without hesitation, name that which elapsed from the death of Domitian, 96 AD, to the accession of Commodus, 180 AD. Ah, Commodus, the bad emperor, the failed son of the philosopher emperor Marcus Aurelius, and the delicious villain in the film Gladiator. He was such a bad ruler that he ended up assassinated by a wrestler at the end of 192 AD, touching off the political crisis in Rome the following year, known as the Year of the Five Emperors. And after that, the crisis of the 3rd century and the seemingly inexorable decline of the Roman Empire. Except if it was climate change that explained the decline of Rome, and the Roman climate optimum had begun to reach its end years before Commodus even assumed the purple, then maybe we can't really blame him? When you compare Roman history to that of China, an obvious analogy jumps out. The Roman climate optimum and the increasingly powerful Rome of the late Republic through Pax Romana until the end of the Antonines, nearly exactly parallels the Han Dynasty in China. Harper puts it this way. The simultaneous efflorescence of the Roman Empire and China under the Han Dynasty are one of history's many strange parallels. Synchronous pulses of growth and refraction on a global scale that seem to require causal mechanisms on the same order of magnitude. The Han Dynasty was officially founded in 202 BC, 1 year before Roman victory in the Second Punic War. And it officially ended in 220 AD, although it had largely declined to a mere husk of itself by the late 2nd century. The Romance of the Three Kingdoms opens with the horrors of the Yellow Turban Rebellion, which began in 184 AD, 4 years after the accession of Commodus. The history of the Han Dynasty, therefore, neatly parallels that of Rome. And perhaps this bears pointing out, although we read Chinese history as a series of dynasties, that because we call them all dynasties, can sound like each other's equals, they were not equals. The Han was China's first great imperial dynasty. The Qing dynasty that momentarily ruled over the empire in the late 3rd and early 4th centuries was far weaker and less stable. The centuries of chaos that followed rather resembled the chaos of what was left of the Roman Empire in the late antique period. Numerous barbarian tribes, quote-unquote, came into China during this time, as comparable barbarian tribes entered Europe simultaneously. The short-lived Sui dynasty at the end of the 6th century and beginning of 7th can perhaps be compared to the reigns of Justinian or Heraclius in Byzantium. Justinian was a near contemporary of the Sui, and Heraclius an actual contemporary. Both sought to revive Roman fortune and temporarily succeeded only to fail ultimately. It was finally the Tang Dynasty, beginning in the early 7th century, that brought about a second great imperial age in China. And the Tang, perhaps, rather finds its parallel in the simultaneous rise of the Islamic Caliphate. But anyway, back to the Han Dynasty. Harper limits his book to the fate of Rome, so there's precious little discussion of what was happening in the climate of Han Dynasty China at the same time. And some of the natural factors that Harper describes as contributing to the Roman climate optimum, from the solar cycle to the absence of major volcanic eruptions around the world, are obviously global in scope. And yet, the Wikipedia entry on Roman climate optimum assures me that it was a regional phenomenon, not a globally coherent episode. So, can anyone tell me what was going on in the Chinese climate around at the same time? When I looked, I found the work of one major Chinese meteorologist named Zhu Kezhen. Now, Zhu Kezhen died in 1974, and as I'm not a professional scholar, I can't tell you whether and to what extent scholarship since then has superseded his work. What I can say is that when I looked for information on paleoclimate in China, his name immediately came up. And rightly so, as he seemed to have been among the best minds of his generation. Born in 1890, he had studied in America on a boxer scholarship. We talked about a boxer scholarship in the past. Anyone selected was emphatically the cream of the crop. In America, he went on to earn a PhD from Harvard. And towards the end of his life, in 1972, he published a seminal paper on Chinese climate throughout history. You have to remember that 1972 was during the Cultural Revolution. Bending to his times, in the paper, Zhu made sure to pay some lip service to Chairman Mao and the infallible teachings of the Chinese Communist Party. But if you ignore that stuff, the rest of the paper remains an astonishing work of scholarship. Much as Harper tries to do with ancient Rome, Zhu combined the findings of modern science with the documentary testimonies of ancient figures to reconstruct how the climate must have been like in centuries past. And according to him, all the eras of major flowering in Chinese history coincided with periods of above average warmth, while the times of chaos and decline coincided with coolings. China was already experiencing a warm period during the spring and autumn and warring states periods, the time when all the great Chinese philosophical traditions were born. For example, the ancient texts repeatedly mention bamboo, even though today bamboo is chiefly a subtropical plant, and even though the ancient texts were focused on today's central and northern China, today squarely in the temperate zone. The period of warmth continued into the Han Dynasty, when Sima Qian, the grand historian, wrote his historical records at the end of the 2nd century BC and beginning of the 1st century BC, he described which types of crops grew in which parts of the empire. Not only was bamboo widespread in northern China at the time, so were orange trees, another subtropical plant. In 110 BC, when the Yellow River flooded, the Chinese cut down local bamboo groves to use to dam the river, demonstrating that bamboo was very common, even on the banks of the Yellow River. That's definitely not the case today. By the end of the Han Dynasty, by the Three Kingdoms era in which Zhuge Liang lived, China's climate had cooled significantly. After the warlord Cao Cao built his famous Bronze Sparrow Pagoda in what is now the province of Hebei, he tried to plant orange trees in the area. But sources tell us that the trees never bore fruit. In 225 AD, Cao Cao's son, Cao Pi, tried to exercise his troops on the banks of the Huai River. But he had to cancel the exercises because a bitter cold had caused the river to freeze. It was the first recorded instance of the Huai River freezing. In sum, if Zhu Kezhen is correct, then climate change in China through the Han Dynasty resembled climate change in the Roman Empire at the same time. And the human civilization, all of our cultural achievements that we are so proud of, may ultimately be attributable to natural forces beyond our control, or even the comprehension of our ancestors, from solar cycles to cosmic radiation to volcanic activities. Or maybe, in a way, our ancestors understood just fine. They just didn't use our modern vocabulary. They did always say, didn't they, that we are mere playthings for the gods. Fate, destiny, the mandate of heaven. Perhaps these were all words that the ancients had for the vicissitudes of natural forces, such as climate. And as clever and as talented as Zhuge Liang was, if he was born into the wrong age, if he was born into a period of cooling, then try as he might, he could not bend the arc of history to his will. All right, before we end, another word of shameless self-promotion. Go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble or wherever you prefer to find your books and search for my book, From the Wall to the Water, the tale of a long journey from China to Italy via the places in between in the footsteps of an ancient Chinese explorer. That's From the Wall to the Water. Thank you for your support, and thank you for listening to MODG.